Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Lyle Bell, and I am the bassist for The Wet Secrets.
And I'm Trevor Anderson. I'm the drummer in The Wet Secrets.
And are you going to represent the two horn players? Will you represent the two women?
Yes, we have Corn Eyes the Kid on trombone, a.k.a. Emma Frazier, and Kim Rackle on trumpet, a.k.a. Dancing Kim Balls.
There's also on keys and congas, Paul Arnish, and on saxophone and timbales, Kristen Maslin.
So Edmonton, Alberta, did 36 hours from there to Austin. That's pretty impressive. But what I kind of like is, and this story's been told before, but, well, number one, 100 shows, festivals, you pretty much tour nonstop, which a band has to do. But tell me the Formed on a Dare story. That was over drinks, right? You were basically formed on a dare, and that's always a, you know, if you're going to pick a reason to start a band, forming on a dare is probably the best of all, right?
We were really drunk, and a friend of ours took a picture of Lyle licking my ear. We said, oh, it looks like you're telling me a wet secret. And it was one of those classic, we should start a band. That's a great name for a band. And we marched over to the bartender and booked ourselves a show for 6 months later, but then forgot all about the show until a week before showtime and the ads hit the newspapers that there would be this new band playing next Saturday night. And we kind of panicked and realized we'd forgotten and hadn't prepared anything. So at that point, we decided to make that the concept, to form a band and write the songs and put together a show in only 1 week. Because we thought, you know, if we let the audience in on it, then they'll be impressed that we did it in a week. But if we don't, then they'll just be like, these guys didn't practice. They don't know their own songs. So we turned it into kind of the art stunt that it became a band in a week challenge.
It was supposed to be a one-off stunt, really. And it was just kind of formed with, we had a week to put it together, and we just sort of picked the people that were around us. I mean, Kim, my girlfriend at the time, her friend Donna, who was our first trombone player. We had a keyboard player named Jeremy. These were just sort of people peripheral to the bar scene. We had all been playing in bands to some degree. Trevor was in a fairly popular band at the time, and so was I. This is one of the reasons why when this poster came out, it was like members of the Vertical Struts and Whitey Houston in a new band, and sensible people probably would have
run for the hills.
Like called the bar and been like, oh, whoa, we actually forgot about this and we're not going to do this. But this art prank, we just figured that we could probably pull it off. I don't know that we could do it again, because it was, at the time, we were drunk 24/7 for the most part when we were this week of practicing and recording. So I'm actually kind of proud that we held it together and wrote what I still consider decent songs. Like, we still play some of the first 10 that we wrote.
Being self-sustaining, touring like you do, and you are a working band. This is what you do, because how could you possibly hold down other gigs and do this and tour as many shows as, or am I wrong there?
You are wrong. We have jobs. Paul,
kind of. We kind of do. Yeah, some of us do.
The ladies are waitresses. I work at an arts nonprofit, the Film and Video Arts Society of Alberta. Paul owns a concrete and landscaping company. Kristen's a music teacher. Lyle is the one right now going, month to month, full-time employed by the band as we get this new album out. And certainly our goal is to level up to the point where all of us could be doing this full-time. But at the moment, the rest of us all have day gigs.
When did the label come into the picture?
We've been working with Six Shooter on and off basically since the beginning of the band. Shauna DeCarche, who is sort of the head of Six Shooter, is an expat Edmontonian. Another former band that I was in was managed by Shauna for a while. And this goes back even before the Wet Secrets. So when Wet Secrets formed, we actually were originally managed by Six Shooter, their management arm. And then it just kind of felt right. Like, we kept in touch. It seems like a weird label maybe for the style of music that we are doing to come out on Six Shooter, but they are just such beautiful people, and we I trust them so much, and they sort of trust us and have given us carte blanche to just continue doing what we're doing and ramp it up even further. There, we're sort of spelled out the plan, the 5-year plan to them, and they were really excited by it. So yeah, to me it's the kind of match that bands dream of, and I don't know why we didn't jump on it a little sooner. Like yeah, it's sort of when you get a label that is fully behind you artistically and as people, that you love them as people, it's sort of a win-win for everyone.
I play the music, and I have to admit that I hadn't seen you live yet. When you first walk out on stage and people go, oh, wait a minute, is this going to be a show? And then, of course, you start playing and they go, oh, wait, they can really play. So that is my back-ass-words way of getting into the fact that how do you find a fire sale with 20 marching band uniforms? Where do you actually go to find that fire sale? I mean, that eBay didn't have that back then, and you wouldn't type in. So who comes up to you, knocks on your door, and goes, oh, by the way, want to buy 20 marching band uniforms because you might want to use that for your band and it might become one of your trademarks someday?
We have my mother to thank for the band uniforms. I used to march in the Red Deer Royals. Red Deer is the small city in Alberta where I'm from. There is a terrific marching band there called the Royals. The marching band uniforms that we wear in the Wet Secrets are the former uniforms of the Royals. I got a phone call from my mother, a message. Trev, it's your mother. I think we can do it. Call me back. That was the whole message. And I called her and she said, they're getting rid of the old uniforms. You could do something with the old uniforms, couldn't you? And I said, yes. Call me Wednesday. And by Wednesday, she had brokered a deal where we could have had all 200 if we wanted them. The band.
Wait. Stop right there. I heard there were 20 and you've only used X amount. There were 200 available?
We were offered 200. The band was pretty new. So I said, just give me 20 for now.
Oh, wait. Where are the other 180?
I called them a year later. And said, the band's going well. Do you still have those last 180? I'll take them. And they said, you know, we were keeping them in a basement. There was a flood. We had to throw them all away. So.
Oh, bummer.
I had to remember that 20 is actually pretty great.
Well, you've got some pretty good seamstresses in the band.
Kim runs a burlesque troupe and makes all the costumes for her burlesque troupe. And so she is a pretty accomplished tailor who recently whipped us up all white versions of the uniforms. Our goal is to accelerate through the visual identity of the uniforms into like a greater level of psychedelia.
I still see it as a punk band at heart. The core is sort of a scrappy punk band grafted onto a marching band in a way. So we have this horn section. When we added a new guy, instead of adding a guitar, which might have been sensible, we added a saxophone player and timbali player, which to me, it sort of made sense. Again, musically, it thematically fit with what we were doing. We always have this theatrical show in mind. So,
At its simplest form, they're uniforms for musicians. It's like dressing up to go to work.
That's true. When you think about it, right, it is the proper form that you would wear as a musician, which most musicians don't wear the proper uniform when you really think about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it made sense to us. We always wanted to do something that was kind of theatrical, even before we had the outfits. The first, I think we did three or four shows where we weren't actually in the outfits, but we were still wearing these sort of garish theatrical.
So you'd be doing that. If it wasn't the marching uniforms, there would have been a visual component.
It would have either been like tight leather pants or giant fur outfits of some sort, probably. But
one of the things that you're quoted as saying, you know, you say in 2014 you stopped drinking. What was that moment you kind of said, okay, we're not that you didn't take it seriously, but this EP now is getting some notice and getting airplay, and there's promo people behind it, and more so than there was. So do you kind of have a sense of where you are? And you mentioned the 5-year plan.
So this band, like we were saying before, it has been around for 11 years. And for quite a long time, it was kind of a side project. We were in other bands. Trevor's also a filmmaker. Kim has the burlesque. So there was a moment about 2.5 years ago where Trevor and I sort of sat down. We sat down for bacon and eggs. And just decided either to quit or really try. Like, we sort of were wondering. It was actually almost another dare, where we were sort of like, how far could we take this thing if we really tried, like, as hard as we can? So we kind of cobbled together a plan. The last album, Free Candy, was somewhat an assembly of songs that we had written in between the albums, plus a couple new ones. So it was sort of that previous era of getting capped off, which was, in our minds, going to kind of reintroduce the band. And then this new one, including Hammer, and the new EP, is sort of the next step. So it's, to me, it was like a planned evolution. And this is the second phase. And we have sort of the third phase already planned and kind of in the cards. But yeah, it's sort of a long plan, like you said, 5 years, with some lofty goals in there that might be embarrassing to talk about. But
being a Canadian band is kind of different, because you do get support up there. You can get, and then you come here and it's like, you're on your own. Good luck. Radio play, let's see what we can do. Not as easy, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is true. There's, on top of CanCon, there's also quite a few grants and bodies that help out with the arts in Canada and to spread it around. Again, a lot of Americans don't, American bands you talk to, they have no idea, in a way, how good we have it in Canada. And Trevor's actually really adept at applying for some of these grants. We don't get them all, obviously, but those kind of things help. And along with the peak money that we won, it allows us to do things like buy a commercial radio tracker in the States, which is right. Not cheap, and again, not something that a lot of independent Canadian bands would have money to. You kind of get walked through why it's a smart maneuver to spend this money that, you know, to an independent band that is still scraping by. It, to some degree, it's humbling to tour in the States, and in Canada we're doing fairly well, but then you come down and sometimes you play in a tiny club and there's 20 people there and you don't make much money. But I mean, this is, again, we have, at least in Canada, we've got this a foothold and a pretty good handle on the system up there and a fan base. So,
but the only way to build a fan base here is to get here and play shows and get in front of people and get the music on the radio and get the show in front of people's faces. So that's our priority, is to work all across North America, Canada, and the United States combined.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs on the outside, but then you get to pick anything you want in between, and we just go back and forth, and whatever you tell me to play. I've done 600 of these with a lot of bands that you might even admire.